Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Penny, who is part of the local Sangha right here by the monastery, and for the last many, many months has given quite generously of her time to captain the effort of keeping the monastery gardens going, and she's agreed to be with us tonight to talk about that. So welcome, Penny.
Thank you, Jen.
So I thought we might start by finding out, how did you become captain of the monastery gardens? How did that come to be?
There was a meeting of some folks and a list of things that needed to be attended to on the monastery property, and the garden came up, and no one responded immediately, and I thought, well, you know, I live next door, so I'm probably the most immediately available person who isn't a monk.
It reminds me of the that old Zen story, very briefly, of the woman who keeps walking by the old dirty pail of water, walking up to the meditation hall thinking, gosh, someone should really take care of that, and sort of day three realizing, oh, I'm a someone. So it sounds a bit like that. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about how long has it been? What, a couple years, something like that?
About 2 years.
2 years. And so what evolved? How's it gone doing the garden during those couple years?
Well, it's a challenge. We actually have two gardens. We have an upper garden and a lower garden. And currently really don't have the person power to manage both of them, but the upper garden has been developed pretty well. At any given time, usually about half of it is planted, half of it being maybe 6 or 7 or 8 beds. And we've been focusing on raising things that are kind of staples at the monastery, like tomatoes and lettuces and greens and things that are, well, frankly, pretty easy to raise and are eaten in great quantity at the monastery.
Yeah. And I can tell you that Penny's being a bit modest, because there's quite a bit of work that goes into the amount of garden that we're keeping tended. And one of the things that's such a gift to the community is that someone did step forward to be able to take that role, because having a garden, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in a minute, is so in keeping with practice and what the monastery represents. And so we've always had a garden to some extent, but especially in recent years, really as technology has exploded and the ability to offer practice has been so, so big. Our attention has largely gone into that, to offering practice. And so we haven't, as Penny said, had the human power to really do some of the physical things around the monastery that we wanted to do. And realizing a couple of years ago, you know, we really do want to have a garden. It's important to who we are. And so what a gift it was to have you step forward to play that role.
Well, you know, from the beginning, the monastery has been about sustainability. And sustainability, it's about sustainability because it's about connection. The practice is all about connection. And so raising your own food is about as connected as you can get. You know, Wendell Berry, the great farmer, poet, essayist, talks about trying to create the shortest distance from earth to plate. And it's so wonderful to be eating something in the monastery dining room and realize it was growing 100 feet away, you know, a day ago. So it really does reconnect us with where things come from, in the same way that, you know, capturing solar power captures where energy comes from, and the way we carefully use water reminds us of what a precious resource that is. It's all of a piece.
Yeah, and I really appreciate the point of that we're making choices of what to plant based on what we eat. So it's not, you know, growing some esoteric thing that then we have to figure out a recipe to put it in, but instead, we know what we serve. We know especially what are the retreat menus, what dishes do we serve on retreat. Therefore, what do we need to plant? And we truly, I think one of the projects that you did over the last year was analyzing our shopping list sort of thing.
Yeah, what we grow derives from two sources. One is the monks just saying, this is the kind of thing we want to have growing here. And it happens, coincidentally, that I also do the weekly shopping. And so I started keeping track of the shopping list and how much produce we buy and what we buy and in what quantities. And so it helped to give us some ideas about how much to plant. Frankly, we can't plant almost as much as we use, but we can get a sense of, you know, we use a lot of this, so let's try to focus on this year.
And I think we've learned so much in the last couple of years of really doing it, and every season we sort of refine how we're doing it. We're in a really fun flow right now where Penny comes down, I think a few times a week, and she leaves us with a list of things that need to be done in the garden. And so the monks will go on certain days and just initial, whatever the next thing is on the list, we just go and do that task. It's very monastic and very satisfying that everyone has a hand in doing it. Someone's taking ultimate responsibility, in this case, you, Penny, for making that happen, but everyone has a hand in it, and we all just come to the next thing, we do it, and somehow, miraculously, it all gets done.
Yeah, it's very zen in a number of ways, one of which is that I actually don't have much experience as a gardener, so all I bring to it is the ultimate zen qualification of being willing. And so I wander through the garden after group on Sunday morning, and the greenhouse is also a greenhouse, and just note what would be the next logical steps to take and what seems doable in a week. And then I send that list down early in the week, and it does provide a guide for all of us.
I think what made me think of that is realizing that truly, it seems to me anyway, that over the seasons we're expanding what's possible. Not expanding our human resource necessarily, but expanding what we know about gardening, what we see about it, what we see as possible, the flow of how we do it. And so I have a feeling that as we go, it will be more and more possible to plant more and more things and rely more on the garden and less on the grocery store.
Well, that's really an ideal goal, and we're so fortunate that in this immediate neighborhood we have some very experienced gardeners. We've got some great organic gardeners in Murphy's and who are more than happy to consult and share information and all excited about, you know, anything we do down here. So we have wonderful resources, and I think as we become more kind of adept at just knowing how to manage a garden, we'll be able to expand it. As someone who makes up the list, I tend to be cautious at first and kind of experiment with something, and then if it seems to go, then we can expand that and really invest some resources in it.
Yeah. One of the things that feels to me anyway from seeing our table that we've been wildly successful with is lettuce.
Yeah, you know, we've had the strangest thing. One thing that's great about working in the garden in terms of Zen practices, it is really lesson in having no control. And so last year, we planted lettuces, and then we planted what's called a succession, which is a month later, you plant more with the idea that you'll replace the first batch. And the second batch just sat there for weeks and weeks and weeks and refused to grow, which is happening again this year. And so when all of a sudden then it all began to grow, then we had a glut of lettuce, and so that was an interesting lesson. So this year we sort of cut back a little bit on the second succession, and we'll see if it starts to grow, then hopefully we'll have just enough. But I'll tell you, as a shopper, it is so satisfying to get the shopping list and not find lettuce on it.
Isn't it? Yeah, that's really fun. I was just thinking, one of my favorite things is to go in that greenhouse and see, and sometimes, you know, I'll be the person who checks off the task of planting the little tiny seeds. And I look at these things, they're microscopic, they're tiny. And I'm just putting them in these little cells of soil. And you can't even imagine that that's going to turn into something. And then just over the days, going in there every day, and suddenly, there it is, little tiny sprout. And it's such a miracle. And then pretty soon, that's stout enough to go and get transplanted in the garden. And then it becomes a lettuce that just feeds and feeds and feeds.
Yeah, I'm reminded that greenhouses really are nurseries. And you actually see the babies be born. It's very exciting to plant those little dead-looking seeds and a week later walk in and hear all these little green sprouts saying, hello, I'm ready to go in the world.
Yeah, that's fun. So we're almost up against the clock. Anything else you want to add in, Penny, before we turn it over to Michael?
Well, only that my experience of working in the garden has been really satisfying because, it does feel so consistent with practice. That practice is about helping us not make the world whole, but recognize the wholeness of the world is literally wholesome. And so gardening and watching things grow and then eating them and then replacing them and we nourish them and they nourish us is part of that whole wholesome cycle. So it's very satisfying.
And it just occurred to me, it's really appropriate. We're starting out the year of deepening practice and talking about how practice is ours. You know, it belongs to everyone. And just what a symbol of your willingness to come down and steward the monastery garden to see. It's not the monastery garden. It's our garden. The garden belongs to the Sangha. So.
And even, you know, as I say, checking in with people in the Murphy's area who are gardeners, it feels like it's, you know, that we're part of the garden. Yeah, the larger garden, and this is just our little piece of it.
Really nice. Thanks so much for being on, Penny.
Thank you.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Penny.
Thank you, Michael.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. That was so... I love that image, I love that whole conversation, but that last image of we're a little piece of the whole garden.
Just yeah.
Seeing the earth as the garden. And
yeah.
Gardeners, and we're all living in that garden. That Garden of Eden image is just you just can't help that when it comes to mind.
Yes, yes. And as you said that, I was thinking that kind of the bigger notion of we are stewards of all of life,
yes.
in a sense, in
yes.
the same way that we're stewards of the garden.
Yes. Yeah. What a glorious thing to keep in mind, huh? You know,
yes.
That it reminds me of the peace quote a few days ago. It was short enough that I think I'm getting it right. There's no place on earth to spit.
Yes.
I mean, that is just one of those. Wow, that's really true. And there's not enough of anything to waste, and it's all precious, and we get to take care of all of this precious life.
Wow. Aren't we lucky?
Yeah. We are. We are.
We are.
And, of course, as we know, because we know it in ourselves, and we certainly hear it in a lot of other places, that that kind of notion seems like a burden. Oh, God. You know, one more thing. I have to take care of everything. Are you kidding? I've been able to do already. I can't. How can I? And yet another way to say that is what you're required to do is live in love every moment of your life. Because
yes.
those are the same statements.
Yes. Yes. Very beautiful. Very beautiful.
Mm. Do you have any announcements for us?
I do.
Do we have anything coming up that's interesting?
Well, yes, indeed. We've got some very exciting events coming up to begin this new year. On Sunday, January 29th, we're going to have our very first live webcast workshop with you, Sherry.
So excited.
So exciting. And that's 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific time. And it will be a conversation of what we were just talking about, the roles we play as stewards of practice and all that we encounter on this amazing spiritual path that we're on.
You know, Michael, when you say that, it's so perfect because we are stewards of practice and of the human being that we inhabit.
Yes.
Right? So, and that's what this next year is going to be about, is about making a compassionate plan to bring care to every aspect of life and to enter into that with an attitude of mind of being supported and being support, which is a
yes.
lovely circular kind of process that just builds love.
Yes, yes. So beautiful, so beautiful. And then on the following Tuesday, the 31st, we'll have a special two-hour open-air show, and that's from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time. And it will be a chance for folks to call in to talk about the new deepening practice plan, the program for that, and ask any questions that they have.
And I think that's got a whole thing behind it. They're right there orchestrating. The folks in the know are orchestrating all of that for us.
We'll
find out as we get closer to it, how people are going to be able to participate and you know, for us to do our best to answer all of the questions and speak to all of the issues and that sort of thing. So it's not just it won't just be a regular show. It'll be a specific show for this this practice plan that we're putting together.
Yes.
Each of us as individuals.
Yes. And folks can register for the video and read more about that and the whole rest of the Deepening Practice Plan program by going to the homepage, which is livingcompassion.org.
Yeah, because then after we do the radio show, there's going to be an email class where we get to explore everything that goes on with us, with the heart and with conditioning at the thought of going in this deeper direction. So that's the details, I guess, are about up there about that too.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Good.
Very exciting. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
I'm Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Sherry.
What's going on, Debbie?
Let's see. So I had a day today where I did all the things I really enjoy. And
how good is that?
Well, it can be fabulous or not, depending.
Oh, there's more to the story, I take it.
Well, so the feeling is like a revving feeling, and like it feels like anxiety, and there's like this, like it's not enough. It why, like it has to be institutionalized, that I need to be part of something bigger to make this stick, to make this last, and just sort of all sorts of machinations about, oh, maybe I'm not a team player, and, you know, I need to just join my efforts with a bigger group, and how do I join my efforts with a bigger group, and all sorts of there's this, like, desire to grow bigger than myself and bigger than myself doing the things I love to do, and a huge desire to, in personal and professional, to grow, to expand, and just not knowing how.
So let me get this, see if I'm with you. This firestorm was set off by you spending the day doing what you love to do?
Well, I think it was, you know, a sort of a visitor who came to observe and participate, it didn't start just today. But if I look at just today and I look at what I'm doing in my life, in my work, personally, professionally, everything,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing everything I want.
Oh.
But it's like it's like this revving feeling of like almost like I'm being beaten up because it's not bigger and it doesn't involve more people.
Okay.
And
so let me ask you this. Does it feel like you want a bigger life, or you're being told you should have a bigger life?
I don't know.
Okay. So there's your homework assignment, okay? To watch it, to watch this whole process as it happens and see if you can get a sense of that. Because
No, you know what? Definitely. I want this. The answer is it's not should. It's not should. I think it would be fun. I think it's great. I think it's fun, and I think it's worthwhile, and I just want more participation.
Mm-hmm. But what puzzles me about this is why you're being beaten up over it. Because
it's like a distraction, agitation. It's not good enough. It's if I look at what I am doing, what I love every day, I feel so grateful to be doing what I'm doing, and I'm sort of positioned in a place to grow something, and I don't know how.
Okay. Okay.
See, and I don't know how to leverage.
All right. So, okay. Let's sort it out into its individual parts. Okay. So, I don't know where you are in our practice, but when I talk about egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, the illusion of a self that's separate from life. Are you with me on that one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. So there is the human, and she loves what she's doing. She loves her life, and she's filled with gratitude. Okay?
Yes.
There's that package. And what she realizes, now, so that person is the very thing that the illusion of separation from life cannot abide. That person is happy, satisfied, and grateful.
Yes.
Okay, so the only way for that illusion of separation to appear to survive is to create some dissatisfaction, strife, misery, and suffering.
Yes.
Yeah? So in it comes. With all of this, it should be different. It should, it's not big enough. You need to be participating more. You need, okay. Now, that happy, satisfied person that we like to call Debbie is perfectly capable of finding out how to make things bigger.
And in fact, that actually happened today. You know, like that, she did find out next steps.
Yes, there you go.
And it didn't stop the voices.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. Oh, let's clarify that, okay? You could be recently elected to Goddess of the Universe, and it wouldn't slow those voices down a bit.
Right.
So those are two completely separate realities.
Mm.
Yeah. So we talk about the light room and the dark room. Okay.
Yeah.
So
that's
the dark room, right? And it's always going to be the dark room, and it's not going to turn up the lights because you are wildly successful. So go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and worse, it's like it creates, you know, once that agitation sets in, like whatever interaction I'm in at the time, I'm not able to enjoy, and it's like,
right. That's
suddenly
right.
It's like, how can this person help me to get X, you know,
that's
to
right.
do X, and it just all becomes,
yep.
And of course it doesn't help.
Nope.
You know, it's just,
nope.
It's like scratching an itch that just keeps itching the more I scratch it.
That turns into a bloody sore eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really, really, really important to get what's going on a process level. So here's this human over here, and she actually is fine. She doesn't have any problems at all. She can do anything she wants to do in life and just enjoy the stew out of it. Karmic conditioning, self-hate, is there like a leech ready to attach the moment you lose focus for a split second.
Right.
So there you are interacting with somebody who has information for you. You would enjoy receiving it and taking it and all of that. But in that split second when you lose attention because who knows why, the conversation is really interesting or something just popped into your head or whatever it is, that leech attaches itself. And when that happens and you're taken over, then it turns into what you described. And your life goes from happy and satisfied to miserable.
Yeah, and it comes with a hurry.
Yes.
It's totally anxiety. It's like, hurry up, you should be here already.
That's right.
So the characteristics
of karmic conditioning, self-hate, it's urgent. There's something wrong. There's loss, lack, deprivation. There's fear. There's anxiety. Those are all the characteristics of that system. When it takes you over, that's exactly right. It starts screaming about because there's something wrong, right? There's not enough. There's urgency. There's anxiety. You've got to hurry. There's something to accomplish. You've got to get somewhere. And
right.
So realizing that that's all that happened. You know, again, when it came into our lives, if it were 9 feet tall and purple, it would be really helpful because we would be able to say, oh, you. But it doesn't. It slides in and takes over our attention, and we become it. And suddenly we are just lost in this world of misery and suffering. And we don't even know how it did that, when it did that. Okay? So that's why we do awareness practice, because your job is going to be, number one, to sort those out, you know, which is happy, satisfied, content, capable, competent, having a good life, human, and which is an escapee from the dark room that is out searching for victims and leeches onto you.
Pretty clear.
It is really clear. It is really clear. And it's especially clear because you're watching it. You're watching the whole continuum, right? So you know that place of satisfaction. You know that urgency and anxiety and pressure. And so it's a matter of watching when it's there, what it says, what it does, how you feel when it takes over your body, when you're looking out through its eyes. And you're learning to disidentify from it and come back to, I'm a happy, satisfied person. I'm grateful for my life. I want it to expand. And then you let life expand your life. You actually don't have to do anything.
Okay.
All right. Now, you'll check back in and let us know, right?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
All right.
Thank
Excellent.
You. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Debbie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Sherry from San Francisco.
Hello, Sherry from San Francisco.
Hello.
What's going on tonight?
I'm so happy to be here.
Me too. Wherever here is, I'm happy to be here.
All day long, because today was my scheduled call. Conditioning had all sorts of schemes about, you know, why I shouldn't call. And it was great because every time I kept saying, oh, it's going to be so fun because when I actually do call, I can say that. You know, I could say, Chia tried to get me, but it didn't.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I loved
it. So every exchange, every interaction was another kind of a little tick on the chalkboard, right? And it didn't get me then. Yeah.
It's like I had a really great athletic event that I got to win, you know?
Uh-huh. Yes. And it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because remember the old days when it would chase you until you'd be out of breath and exhausted and hysterical and all of that? And now it's an athletic event and you're winning.
I love that. And, you know, on top of that, I've been sitting here listening, you know, from the beginning, and it's one of those calls where everything is for me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like...
oh, yeah. That yes, I'm right there.
Yes.
It's laid out so perfectly, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that all gets planned, but wow.
Life is good.
I loved particularly, I mean, there were so many things I loved already, but when you were talking about being supported and being support, I just that felt to me like that was lit up in these like 12-foot high letters.
Once we see it like that, it's so obvious, isn't it, that it has to be that way.
Yes.
Yes. Karmic conditioning wants us to believe that life should actually be a one-way street in which all good things are coming to me.
Right.
With a minimum amount of effort or no effort on my part. That would be the ideal. And, of course, it obviously doesn't work that way. The garden was such a beautiful example.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, what I see in my own life is that it loves to swing. It's either everything should come to me, or I should give, and stop. You know, it likes to swing back and forth.
Yes, but the given is it's all about me.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah. So however it goes, it's definitely, and we talk about it's all for me. You know, that's a very real spiritual experience. We get to a certain point in practice and we look around and go, this is all set up for me, isn't it? All of you people are just acting this out for my benefit, aren't you? And that's a very disidentified place. It's the same all about me language, but the experience is night and day different, right? Because in the ego, it's all about me. It's either, okay, as you say, I should get everything because we don't know why, but I just should. Or I really shouldn't have anything. I should just give everything all the time. But I'm still the center of the universe. Let's never lose sight of that.
Yes. And yes, and I just when you said being supported and being support, I just felt, I had this beautiful expression that I love about a circle of giving. And I realized that it's the same thing.
Yes, that's what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes. And it's exactly what I want my life to be.
Yes. Yes. No gaps. No lines. Now,
yeah.
again, it's the really positive side of no boundaries. Right? So in the world of psychology, of course, having no boundaries is just, you know, one step away from a straitjacket, right? It's just the worst thing. So you have to learn to have boundaries and you have to, you know, do all of these setting boundary things. And yet what we're going for in practice is no boundaries, but it's the only thing that needs boundaries is an ego. And so if our life is not focused on our ego, then we actually don't need boundaries. Life provides all the boundaries that we need in the sense of time and space and rhythm and schedule and activity and not. And
yeah, when you said that, I just saw so clearly, too, that it's like, you know, that us and them, that is the one that's tallying, you know.
Precisely. Yes, and that you should get everything. No, you should give everything. Again, is all a tallying system by egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, right? Because
the reality, as I, at least in the last few minutes of listening to the call, what I was experiencing is like, wow, it's really all just truly the same.
Yes. So when we get it that we are not separate, then truly nothing can happen to you that doesn't happen to me.
Wow.
And vice versa. Big.
I'm so struck in this moment that just being on a telephone call, that something like that can get conveyed. It's really phenomenal.
Yes.
Isn't it? Like, yeah. What world? I'm just like, wow, I feel like Alice in Wonderland. Like, how did I fall into this mystical, magical world where, you know, I'm just sitting here on the phone.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And our hearts are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. And I love, I mean, I guess I just have to put in another plug for this. So it's like conditioning then. It's like when I kept saying, no, I'm going to call, you know, and I'm going to tell them that you tried to get me to stop. And then it like really wanted me ahead of the topic. Wow, you should have a topic. You know, it's been too long. And I was just thinking, you know, if I would have had a topic, I may not have heard, you know.
Your point is, I don't know if it's the essential point, but boy, it's up there top three. Conditioning wants to control everything so that we always have the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
Life is always taking us into new places.
Wait, I missed that. Can you say that last thing again?
Yeah, that the reason karmic conditioning wants to be in control, so you need a topic. So the topic that you pick is going to be your karma. That's
yes.
What it would have you pick. And
yes.
So you would say the same things about your karma that you always say, and you would hear whatever is said to you through the same karmic filters, and
yes.
You would wind up in the same place. That's
yes.
Why it wants to control what you say and what you do and what you see and what you think. And okay, life is constantly bringing us into new places. So when
wow.
We go with life in the moment, it's not going through a karmic, you know, it's not our karmic filter that is having deciding the experience. So we get to see new things all the time. And because karmic conditioning can't catch up because it's always behind the moment, every
wow.
We have a chance to see things with fresh eyes and fresh minds.
Oh, hallelujah. Wow.
Isn't that fun?
That is so fun. I am so grateful.
Me too.
I'm going to head off now because my time is up, but wow, thank you so much.
Great talking with you. Let's
very,
talk
very
again
great.
Soon with no subject in mind.
Will do.
All
thank
right.
You, Michael. Thanks,
thanks
Sherry.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs, iPhones and iPads, and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. So shine.
This beautiful song by Trish Brooks for Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
You are the light of the world.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Virginia. Hey, Virginia.
Hi.
How are you doing? I'm doing very well. Thank
Excellent.
You.
What's going on?
Well, I just called because I made a commitment to call once a month in 2012, and this is my call. So,
what should we talk about?
Yeah, what should we talk about? I know, I really enjoyed that last part of your conversation with the last caller about how, and I don't really have a topic, but I could think of one, but now I'm kind of concerned it would be just my current condition.
And so if we didn't have one, if I said, you know, my standard what's going on, which I did, then there is a chance that you would just simply look into the banks there, the filing cabinet, and pull out one of the standards, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So any insights or awarenesses lately that that we could look at?
Well, I did have an awareness on Monday, yesterday. It had to do with body sensations, and I'm not sure if I can really talk about it. I just had the opportunity to go inside and kind of sense what was going on rather than think it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Always a good plan, huh?
Yeah.
So may I?
Go ahead.
One of the things that people who, when we're on retreat, say, if I'm doing any kind of guided imagery or asking people to look at something, what I say to them is, I ask them to sit quietly and not to think about this. Don't go up into conditioned mind. Don't go to your head. Don't let attention go there. But instead, allow to arise in conscious, compassionate awareness a response to whatever it is that I'm asking them. And that reminds me of what you just said, where instead of there's something about the body, and then, you know, the conditioning is to leave the body as quickly as possible, go up into the head, and start in a big conversation, a big noodling about it. But instead, you stayed with the body and sensed the body. True?
Yeah, I did. And maybe I was prepped from the New Year's retreat because we worked a lot with allowing to arise in conscious, compassionate awareness. And yeah, but that is exactly what happened. And it's interesting to me because it was a lovely experience, and I felt so energized. After, you know, I had the experience, and it was like, wow, you know, I feel like I'm alive. Yeah.
And was that a part of it? Just the being present with or being in touch with, kind of the what it feels like for life to be animating a physical form.
I'm not sure, Sherry. I'm not sure how to answer that because I don't know. In my words, I don't know if this is the same as your words. In my words, it was like I was like almost falling in love with myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yes. I was there for myself. Maybe
yes.
That's a better way to put it.
You were really present.
I was really present. Yeah.
Not
and
thinking about it.
Right.
But really with the person.
Right, exactly. I was with this person. I was with the person, Virginia, yes. And my hunch here, my guess is that she doesn't get that a lot, and it was just like, wow.
yes, exactly so, and very few people do, right? Because in just the way we've been looking at it, what happens is that there's this person we call Virginia, and there's not, the conditioning is for nobody to be there with her.
Yeah.
She's to be
exactly.
observed. And
say that again, please.
she's to be observed, scrutinized, compared,
oh, observed, scrutinized,
judged.
Yes.
All of those things. So somebody watches her and says things about her, decides things about her, says things to her. But to have that just pure being at one with is not something that that people get to experience a lot. All the conditioning is to keep that from happening.
Oh, my gosh.
And we know why, don't we?
Right, because there's so much joy and life and vitality there.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And that falling in love with that human being, there's very little desire than to mistreat her or criticize her. Or, in fact, what you want to do is be kind to her, take care of her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you're right, Sherry, and it was like, and everyone, I mean, it was like the heart just opened right up, you know?
Yes. Yep. And that is that's the ultimate thing you are never supposed to do.
That's,
right? Because when your heart opened to her, it opened to everyone and everything.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it felt that way. It just felt like there was nothing that could out of balance. Everything was in perfect balance, and whatever was there.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, it was so cool. And I really appreciate what you said, though, that it's true what you were describing about in the general play is that she gets observed and scrutinized.
Criticized.
And
we watch her for everything she's doing wrong.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And you actually, I don't want to detour very much here, but you had a recent blog where that was also very helpful, I think, to me along this subject where you put in words like the I have, the I need to, the I must are all conditioned mind. That's not me. That's who I thought I am. That's who I think I am, but that's not me. That's
not you. And in that moment of awareness, you got who you really are.
Ah. And partly, I would have to say, for me, I got that there's this person who I don't really know. I mean, you know.
Yes.
Who is yet to be discovered.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, just to really underline this, because it's so important. All of the self-improvement that you were taught to believe you needed to do because there was something wrong with you that needed to be fixed, all of that was just a smokescreen to keep you from seeing who's really there.
Yes.
And if we want to take this another step, and why not?
Why not?
She has actually been guiding you this whole time.
Oh, I love that.
Guiding you home to her, to you.
Oh, wow. That gives me chills.
It should.
Yeah, I love that, Sherry. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. That book title, That Which You're Seeking Is Causing You to Seek.
That Which You're Seeking Is Causing You to Seek, yes.
We're taught that you're going to improve this flawed human being and finally turn her into something worthwhile and lovable. And all the time, everything that you ever hoped for has been residing right there in your heart.
Right. And so the smokescreen is to keep me from accompanying myself or from meeting myself or
yes. From loving
right
yourself.
There.
Yes.
Pardon me?
From loving yourself.
From loving myself.
From living from that place of unconditional love, acceptance, kindness, generosity, gratitude that is who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, like, too, like, on a very tiny level, I don't know, that part about being with the sensations, it's really expansive for me. It's, I guess it's a doorway.
Yes, precisely. And what makes it such a big doorway is it doesn't exist in your head. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're trying to do when we can get out of that conversation and just be with. That's when the magic happens. That's when you get the goodness that's there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited, Sherry. Thank you so much. And
you are so welcome.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's great.
Thank you. Happy New Year, and I will look forward to talking with you soon.
All right. I'll look forward to it, too. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Paula in South Carolina.
Well, hello, Paula.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm practicing. I'm doing recording and listening. Overall, I think I'm in a really good place.
Good.
There is something particular that's come up that I could use some guidance around.
Right. What's that?
This is the last time I talked with you on the radio show. I was talking with you about my mother and my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law had passed away earlier in this year, and my own mother had gone into an assisted living facility. And kind of to sum it up, over the last few months, my mother's condition has deteriorated to the point that she is, and what I would say, it seems to me that she's suffering all the time.
What is the form of that suffering, Paula?
Well, she has developed developing dementia for quite some time. But it's reached a point where she really can't communicate. She's lost her ability to be able to speak clearly. And she is, so that makes it very difficult for us to know how to respond to her needs.
Is she aware of that? I mean, is it a source of frustration for her, or
extreme frustration? Extreme. It seems as though that there's nothing. It seems as though everything that we try, that me and my sisters and that her healthcare providers try, that nothing really relieves her anxiety, her fear, her frustration, her sense of, she cries almost all the time. I mean, a good share of the time when she's alert. And she recently, just this past week, became unable to be taken care of in that assisted living facility and was moved into a skilled nursing facility. And I guess what it boils down to is that I just see her in such misery, and I want to help her, and I don't know how to do it. I don't I can't see a way to make her life less filled with the suffering, and yet it's kind of, that's what I want more than anything.
Heartbreaking. Because there's nothing anybody can do.
It seems like the only thing that, the only time when she is not in great distress is when she's so sedated that she's hardly responsive.
Yeah, that thought just arose, that the only time she's not having that experience is when she's so medicated that the connections can't be made any longer on any level.
That's correct, yeah. I don't know, Sherry. I mean, it seems like I'm so grateful that I have had the support I've had through email classes. And I think that I'm doing the best I can, but I'm really struggling with this is kind of tapping into kind of a broader picture, and that when I see people suffering, it's nearly unbearable.
Yeah. So there are a few things about that for me that I would offer to you for us to talk about. One is that this is really kind of up for me right now, and I largely because I talk to so many people who are basically in this same place that you're in, where parents are getting to the end of life, and nobody's prepared. Nobody is prepared for how this is going to go. And we have this system where we just keep people alive indefinitely with no consideration at all of what's happening to them. Keep us alive at any cost. Keep us alive no matter what. The rest of the world can do whatever it's struggle, however they're going to struggle, but that's part of privilege. And to me, it's a real quick lesson in what a really bad idea that is.
I absolutely agree with that. And I really feel that my mom would not want to go on this way.
Oh, God.
But she can't communicate that.
No, she can't. And so this is the second part of it, and this is one of the places where our practice, I'm hoping, is going to be focused on a couple of specifics over the next while. One is health and fitness for all of us, for a lot of the same reasons, and this is how I'll tie these two together. Karmic conditioning talks people into making bad decisions every day. And there's this vague notion that somewhere down the line, I'll make a different decision.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and of course, that day never comes. And then when people get to what is the inevitable conclusion of the choices that have been made, there is a despair. And it is just, for me, about the saddest thing ever. Because, and again, I think I just talked about this last week, but I can't remember, that image the Buddha used of children playing in a burning building. You know, there's this idea that it's going to be okay. There isn't, no, it's fine. We're fine. We're having fun. We're having a good time. And, I don't want to I don't want to be careful about what I eat. I don't want to have to exercise. I don't want to take care of myself. I'm having fun. And I want to enjoy life, and this is enjoying life. And then, boom, down the road, we get in these awful places, and our way of handling it as a society is, if you can afford it, then we'll just keep you alive under any circumstances until the body finally collapses in some way and can't sustain itself any longer, and the person dies. And I personally think it's insane, but there we are. And so now, here's my wish for you, is that you would take this to heart as a really big lesson for yourself about how you want to approach the rest of your life, so that you don't wind up in that situation, which could be the very best gift that your mother could ever give you, and I'm sure she's given you a lot. So that's one piece of it. And the other piece is, for God's sake, don't let the voices of self-hate come at you under these circumstances. You know, I know, anybody who knows you, anybody's listening to this, knows that you would do anything to save your mother from these circumstances. There's nothing that you can do.
Paula,
we have a terrible connection. Michael, can you hear her okay?
I think it was kind of scratchy there for a second, yes.
Okay.
Are you there, Paula?
There.
Just a second.
Oh, much better.
Okay, that better?
Much better, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I think I slipped my hand over the microphone.
Oh, okay.
I have, in fact, I mean, what this has done is I've thought a great deal about my own health, and I mean, I've always taken a lot of responsibility for that, but I have, of course, I've increased that tremendously over the last few months, because I do realize that is something that's a choice that I can make to take care of my own health, and I'm really very doing that in a very intentional and very committed way, and talking a great deal about, I guess, end-of-life issues when it comes to myself and my husband. And the other piece, though, that you recommend is not to let the voices get you, which is, I think, for the most part, I catch that, but then every now and then when I talk with my sister, because I'm like the 9-hour drive away from my mom, and I do have a sister who's taking care of her, or they're nearby, but when I speak with her almost every day or every other day, most of the time it's pretty miserable, and it's very easy for me to slip into I have to take this, I have to stop this, I have to do something to make this end. And that's then puts me into this kind of a spin that I have just, what can that be? How can it? I've gone over everything I could think of to make that possible, or to think of ways to make her more comfortable or somehow to end this more quickly, but so far it's just not
possible.
Things just haven't played out that way.
The net result, I think, is our hearts just get broken, and to face all of life. Life is gorgeous. It's fun. It's exciting. It's and it's also this. It's also we have bodies, and they get old, and we get sick, and people die, and that's as much a part of life as anything else. And it just can be breaking.
Yeah, and that's the word that I've used a lot. It's like heartbreaking for me, but I also know it is all, you know, it's for my sisters as well. And I just, you know, I appreciate that you were there and I appreciate that Michael's there and that we're able to have this conversation. And I thank you so much.
Oh, well,
for your time.
Yeah. Stay, you know, let us be part of your support system. And, you know, I don't know, it's a funny, I know that this is true for you, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. You know, let this be the thing that deepens your commitment to unconditional love.
Yeah.
So that to the best of your ability, not a moment of your life from now on passes without an acknowledgement that it's really brief. We don't know where it's going. We don't know what's ahead of us or how it's going to end. And so just to be as open and open-hearted and loving to everybody that we encounter as possible. That's the best we can do.
Yeah.
Starting.
I will
yourself.
Do that.
Yeah. Good. All right. Well, take very good care of yourself.
Okay. Thank you again, Sherry.
Oh,
bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Paula. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow, that was powerful, Sherry.
I mean, Ram Dass said it. You know, we just have to hold hands. It's just too big to try to go through alone.
Yes. 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 Sherry, we have about 3 minutes to the hour. Would you like to talk to another caller?
Yes. As long as we're all clear that we've got 3 minutes, we'll go as fast as we can and make a date for next week if we need to.
Perfect. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Dennis calling from around Toronto. I'm calling back.
Hey, how are you?
Actually, I went through a really difficult period. I'm not sure I can say everything in 3 minutes, but I do have a question.
Okay.
That we can maybe limit ourselves to. So I was having anxiety, and my anxiety went out of control, and I started getting really extreme anxiety sensations in my body.
Panic attacks?
They were panic attacks, but then even after I used mindfulness with the panic, and the peaks would be lower, but I felt like I just had really, like, the effect of that was just really strong, persisting anxiety, and I had to go on an antidepressant, and there was a lot of guilt about that, but it's really been tremendous in improving my ability to get a grip on things. But one specific question I have is, the pattern is my anxiety has gone from, you know, going to this sort of child personality where I feel like crying, which is a coping mechanism I developed when I was a kid, and I've seen it for years, and I've been trying to, you know, embrace myself, and that's worked. And so now I don't do that coping mechanism anymore. And so now my ego is like, well, now what? You have all this anxiety. It doesn't go into that coping mechanism anymore. What are you going to do? And I, to be honest, I don't really know what to do because I have these extreme bodily sensations of anxiety from time to time.
And what can you tell me what the sensations are? Because the label is anxiety. So what are the sensations?
I feel like I have to pace. I lost my appetite to eat completely. Like I just nothing, you know, nothing would taste good. I mean, those were some of the worst symptoms of it.
Uh-huh. And are there frightening thoughts, dread?
There are. Like when I go to sleep, the you know, self-hate can pick up. Like I meditate before bed, and it helps. and I don't get caught. And then when I go unconscious, like one night I had a dream that I was harming other people, which is just ridiculous, but it was just like my conditioning looking for something that might be a reason for my anxiety. I mean, that's what I'm interpreting it. And so it said, oh, well, this is a danger that might happen, but of course there's no danger in that.
Oh, I so wish you were at the beginning of the show and not at the end. Have you tried alternative healthcare professionals at all?
No, but I've done help from a therapist and I don't see it as being a primarily medical issue, but I'm very grateful for the medical support that I've gotten.
Right. Well, of course I'm not really talking about medical in that sense. I'm talking about people who might be able to put together a body-mind connection for you. Those are really interesting symptoms. You know, most people who talk about anxiety are not talking about that. Right? Can you call back?
I can, but I might not get through for a couple of months. I mean, I've tried my best to call and right at the start, but I don't know.
So you tried for a couple of months and this is the first time you've gotten through?
Well, no. I mean, I guess that's a bit overdramatic, but
that's okay.
I called and then I don't get through sometimes, and then I call too early and then I don't get in. So.
Okay. Well, will you try again? Because I would really like to look at this some more with you. I will tell you that some of the things that I'm hoping the Sangha is going to explore in the next little while, health and fitness being one, and this country seems to, or else it's just meditators, there seems to be an epidemic of adrenal fatigue and insomnia and anxiety. You know, for years it was primarily depression that people were experiencing. Now there are all of these on the other side kinds of situations that people are in that are being really difficult, beyond difficult for them to deal with. And so I'm quite fascinated by the spiritual aspects of this whole whatever it is that's going on with people. So please try again. And because I would very much like to talk more about this.
I'll give it a try again.
I'll see. Actually, I'll see if there's any technical way to flag your, I don't know. I don't know how this whole system works, but if there's a way to tell, I would ask the technical people to put you at the top of the queue the next time you call so that we'll have more time.
Okay.
Right?
It's just kind of the luck of the draw thing. But,
yeah, well, but we'll see if we can increase our chances with the luck.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Take care. I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Yeah, talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Dennis. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. What a privilege, Sherry.
It is indeed, Michael. You know, I just heard a rumor, Michael, that we've been doing this for 10 years.
It's true.
I had no idea. Wow, we were just children when we started. You remember that? Anyway, let's do it again next week.
Wonderful.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.